Chicago native J.D. Simo began making a name for himself at age 24 when he landed the coveted Don Kelly gig at Roberts Western World in Nashville, following in the footsteps of greats like Brent Mason, Johnny Hyland, and Red Bogart. After his tenure with Kelly, J.D. made the transition to session musician while working in his own project, Simo, a rockin' three-piece band. I'm John Bollinger with Premier Guitar, and I'm here with J.D. Simo in his Nashville studio. Hey, thanks so much for joining us today, J.D.
Thanks for coming. It's a pleasure to have you.
Hey, since we're by your main amp, let's start there.
All right, well, this is my 67 bone stock 100-watt Super Lead, and it's in the rarest color that they ever made, so I've been told, purple. And this actually belongs to a good friend of mine who's been gracious enough to let me use it for the last few years. This one came from my buddy Gary, who is my first friend. Him and my buddy Tommy Hatcher were the ones that kind of gave me access to all of these vintage Plexi era Marshalls. And no two sound the same. And they all, I mean, it was cool because I got to find what I wanted to hear and what I wanted to feel, and it kind of all ended when I played through this one, and this one's amazing, and you know, it's served me well for a few years now.
I'm sorry, did you say it's 100-watt or 50-watt?
It's 100-watt. All the ones I use are hundreds. I've gone through periods where I've used 50s, but I don't like the 50s as much. I like headroom. I don't like a lot of compression, I don't know. I know that sounds completely crazy because I don't use any attenuation. There's a lot of debate, you know, like how did Clapton or Duane Allman or Paul Kossoff or Jeff Beck or whatever, you know, like back in the old days, you know, like how did they set their amplifiers? And it varied, obviously, but a lot of the times they would dime everything. A lot of times. And, you know, I know that sounds ridiculous, but, you know, these circuits, when everything's on 10, it's essentially flat. And when you turn these back, they're actually cutting that frequency. So if you want like the full harmonic content of them, you know, you need to turn them up. You notice though, I usually run, I know with the lights it might be hard to see, but usually the presence is usually around 6 or 5 or whatever. That's the only one I really dick with at all. Bass is always off.
Really?
Middle's always on 10, treble's always on 10, and I always plug into the bright channel, that's always on 10. And the second volume, even though I'm not jumpering, there's ghosting that happens when you're playing that loud, and you can hear a little bit of difference in the top end when you turn. So this is usually, it really doesn't matter. I mean, it's just as long as it's on. And the reason why the bass is off is because, first of all, through old cabs, there's so much low end that if you turn the bass up, it can get farty. And also, when you turn the bass up on these old Marshalls, it pulls the mids back. So if you want the mids to be forward, you just turn the bass off all the way, and then you actually get more in the mid range, which obviously guitar is a mid range instrument, so it helps cut more in a pleasant way, in a way that's not piercing. I only use old NOS tubes, which, number one, they sound better, and number two, they last. They were made to last.
Where do you find them? You do not want to give that away.
No. I can give that away. Very nice friends. You gotta dig, and you know, it's like I've got a couple of friends that are friends of friends, and you know, over the last few years, you know, I've been on the receiving end of some very gracious people who have, you know, massive collections of stuff and have been gracious enough to let me have some stuff, or in particular the stuff that I like, you know, because much like the amplifiers differ, this stuff differs widely, and so you kind of got to find what you like, you know, and once you find it, then it's like, and that's very much kind of with all that I use. Like, I'm a minimalist by nature, but it's like I'll find what works for me, and I don't really change. I don't really, like, I'm a very content person. Like, when I find something that's that I think is amazing, you know, there's no reason to change then. So I don't really, you know, which sometimes comes off weird because people are always like, oh, you know, check this out. And it's like, I don't really have much of an interest because I'm happy, you know. So anyway, yeah. Back to this.
That was zen, man.
Well, you know, I mean, yeah. I'm happy. I'm beyond happy with what I get to use. So anyway, what I was saying about the three preamp tubes in these old Marshalls, V1, V2, V3, okay? This one right here, V1, this is the one you're hearing the most. This is the one that's actually affecting the sound, the EQ, the harmonics the most. These two just need to be stable, solid, and, you know, these are more that the amp is functioning. You know, you're not hearing these really. And then, of course, you got your power tube. So what I was saying about the bright cap and the presence control is that I leave the bright caps in, which most people take them out, because that allows me to run the presence control lower than I normally would. Because what happens inevitably with any tube is in V1, when you're running loud like this, is they get microphonic, and you want it to be a little microphonic because that's where the harmonics come from. And it's a balancing act, because a little microphonic, you get these harmonics that won't come of something that isn't. But if it's too microphonic, then it's noisy and making that you know, yeah, sound, and, you know, so what happens is, you know, I generally go through, whenever this tube is about to go, I go through multiple different ones to replace it and find the one that works, because one will work in...
You're like audition?
Yes, yes, I will. And I actually have them marked. I'm weird. So, like, because one will work in this particular amp, but not in this one. This one will be noisy in this one. I know that sounds crazy, but it's true. But if you know, it takes, you know, 20 minutes to do it. You know it immediately. So anyway, so this one, you know, it can get microphonic, and, you know, the bright cap allows me to run the presence way below, because the more you turn the presence up, if it's microphonic, then the presence control being high will cause it to squeal more. And, like, if it's squealing, that's another thing. Like, if you're using an old Marshall or something like that and it's doing that squeal, just turn the presence control down and it'll go away. But you need it to be where it's going to be for you to cut through the band and have the EQ curve you want. So that's one of the things that I've developed that works for me to make these things be as consistent as possible. These two slots, it doesn't really matter to me as long as they're old and they test perfect, because they just need to function well. But in V1, I'm generally, I like old RCAs that are affectionately called the Meatball logo RCAs, which is the logo that's on the tube. And those are the ones I like the most. A lot of people like old Mullards in here and stuff like that, and, you know, that's a lot, depending on the era of what came stock in them, but I like the RCAs for the kind of sound I'm going for. And then power tubes, generally, I think both of these that are EL34s, they're all Mullard XF2s. Now, modern tube production has gone so down in the last 40 years, because at one time this was military spec. You know, it had to, it couldn't fail. It had to be perfect.
Well, yeah, NASA used it.
Exactly. So, you know, they're not, and, you know, they don't need that now. You know, they've gone past that. So now the only people who use this stuff are knuckleheads like us, you know. The next thing I should talk about, which I don't necessarily have to show you, it's on the floor down there, is I always run the amplifiers off of Variax. And most people think that I'm doing like the Eddie Van Halen thing where I'm starving it to make it overdrive more. And I'm not. I'm actually using the Variac to run it at the proper voltage, because the other thing is, like, Marshall, you know, people, oh, Marshalls and Voxes in particular, like, oh man, old ones are so notorious. They'll blow up, they'll catch on fire. And it's like, well, you know, they were designed for United States to run at 110. And, you know, if you plug like a multimeter into an outlet in your house, you could read 126,
right.
You know? So that's a pretty, that's huge, yeah. You know? I mean, that'll blow an amp up, yeah. You know? So that's the other thing is, you know, me and my buddy Gary, who helps me all the time, you know, each of these amplifiers, we set up at different voltages. This one's always been set up to run at 113 because it seems to harmonically speak best there. And I'm nuts, man. These things run really hot, you know, just like old Voxes do. And all those stories about, you know, amplifiers catching on fire and stuff like that, you know. So I always have the backs off, always. You know, that when we travel, they travel in road cases, so it doesn't really matter. It doesn't need to be in. The backs are always off so that this is all open. And I have a little clip-on fan that's always right here blowing on these, keeping these cool. And so that combined with running them off of Variac, you know, at the proper voltage that it's been biased to run at, I've never had one problem. Well, I guess while we're back here, I can show you one little trick. This is the output selector, you know, for your cabinet, you know, 16 ohm, 8 ohm, 4 ohm with these old style plugs. You know, running a full stack, you know, you run it at 8 ohms because they're both 16 ohm cabinets, and this, by the way, is an old 69 basket weave, which is my main cab. This one on the bottom is a newer cab that has old speakers in it, but I don't always use two cabs. I like to because, and it's not necessarily because I want to be that much louder. They sound different whether you're coming off the 16 ohm or the 8 ohm.
Sure.
I know that sounds ridiculous. I think that if you want to go down the path I've gone down, it's fun, it's very rewarding, and it can lead to really inspiring things, you know, emanating from your rig. But also at the same time, there's like a divide that has to happen where it's like your goal is to make music, not to be focused on that the preamp tube is not emitting the certain frequency that you're missing or something.
Right.
And it can be distracting. And so, like, I've had to temper it where... like, you know, you know, it's like you're making music, man. So yeah. I've had to let go of it somewhat. I like to run through two cabs as much as possible. Sometimes I can't. And so then, you know, you run it at 16 ohms. But one of the little tricks to attenuate these is if you're running through a 16 ohm cab, you can run it at 8 ohms through one cab and it attenuates it, I don't know, maybe about a half a dB, maybe a little more than a half a dB. Or you could run it on the 4 ohm. And it would attenuate it even more, where it'd be like maybe a dB and a half or something like that. I wouldn't recommend doing that all the time. I wouldn't recommend doing that, you know, often. Mm-hmm. But like that is one of the little tricks that I've learned along the way to, you know, like when I need to be a little bit more conscious of it, you know. So that's something that I've done. Haven't had to do it really all that much, but that's a little trick, you know.
Yeah.
So.
Right. What do you mic? Which do you have one speaker?
I do, of course. Yeah. This one right here is the sweet one, and they're actually in this cab. They're not all the same. These two are like old 25 watt greenbacks, and these two are actually modern Serwin Vega copies that Weber speakers make.
Yeah.
And I'm a massive, massive Duane Allman fan. And through many hours of geekdom, I I kept reading that like that a tech of Dwayne's worked for Serwin Vega, and like I'd always heard that Dickie used JBLs in his Marshall caps back in those days, which that's what they sound like to me.
Yeah.
But Dwayne never sounded, Dwayne's tone never sounded to me like he was playing through JBLs. It always sounded, for the most part, pretty much like Celestion. But then I'd never heard what an old Serwin Vega sounded like. And so I was actually, I remember we were playing a gig in Georgia. I had just gotten to play, they'd loaned me Dwayne's old Gold Top for a gig that we did in Macon, which was a huge thrill for me. And so I was on a kick, and I was like, you know, the next day we were playing, I forget where else, but we were playing another place in Georgia, and I was just like, just going nuts, and I was like, man, Serwin Vega, Serwin Vega. And it turned out that Weber makes copies of them, so I'm like, well, what the heck, you know, let me try them out. So I got two of them, put them in, and they've stayed in there ever since, which is like a year and a half, because I love what they do, and I love in conjunction with the two Celestion greenbacks. They're flatter. The Celestians are kind of humpy in the mid range, which is a good thing. And these are flatter sounding. And when you put your ear up against it, if you're crazy enough to do that like I am, you know, they sound, it sounds like maybe they're brighter, but they're actually not. They actually, they're, you know, like micing them up, they're flatter. So it makes for a really nice, pleasant sound. And anyway, the question, the initial question. I'm the king of digression.
Yeah.
But anyway, the initial question, yeah, I always mic this one, always. And I actually, we've fallen in love with these Cascade fatheads. They're really inexpensive and they're fantastic.
To use them live and...
Yeah, as often as we can. But yeah, our new record, which we made in this room, virtually everything is this, except for a couple things we did somewhere else, but yeah, I love these things. They're great. They're basically a Coles copy, and it's a ribbon. And I mean, this sucker has been hammered like you wouldn't believe, and it's still, you know, hasn't blown the ribbon yet. So these things are great, and Cascade's been really good to us, and they sound great on drums too.
Okay, so we've covered Marshalls.
Yes.
Thoroughly.
Yes.
Let's hear about these.
So, well, this I actually have used more the last couple of years. This is actually Frank and Simon's. As you can probably tell, none of this gear's mine. I am a mooch.
You own one guitar.
I own one guitar, yeah. No, but this is Frank. Frank's had this forever, the bass player in Simo, Frank Swart, and he actually used to play bass through this, believe it or not. And I always forget the model number, but it's just the 35 watt version, the Twin 12 Sears and Roebuck. I usually only use the second channel. I love the tremolo in it, and also it just mics up really well, and it takes fuzzes really good. So there's several tracks on the new record that when I'm not playing through the Marshalls, I use that. So that's that one.
Cool. I think it says model 14.
1484 sounds right to me. So yeah, it's a great amp. I like it. It's fun.
Okay.
And that one down
deluxe.
There. Yeah, that's my old 67. I believe it's 67, 66, 67. I like 67s, by the way.
Yeah.
Deluxe that I've had for quite a long time, and it's has a vintage 30 in it that, I mean, you know, thousands of gigs of mine. I've had that speaker longer than I've had that amp. Like,
oh, really?
I had other amplifiers, and I really like, because the thing with vintage 30s in Fenders sometimes is it can take a while for them to break in correctly, to the point of what I want to hear. They're great speakers, but that one has been pummeled so hard for so many years.
Oh, like just, all those Don Kelly gigs.
Yeah. I mean, that's it. That speaker, maybe not that amp, but that speaker. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, it just sounds great. And the irony of it is, after all the years where that was like my main, and back when I was doing sessions all the time too, that was always like my main amplifier before Simo formed. Now it's what I sing through here. On the record, we always split, and the vocals always going in there, and that's kind of like a little bit of a monitor for us in here when we're tracking. So I sing through it more than I play through it these days, which is heresy. the main pedal that I use, if I'm going to use a pedal, is an old Wah-Wah pedal. I've had several old Wahs, and like the Marshalls, I've had generous people allow me to use their old Wah-Wahs. Nothing sounds like an old Wah-Wah. Nothing does. And they all sound different. As a backup for that, I have this, which is actually a Joe Bonamassa signature Crybaby. There was a period about 2 years ago where Simon was out for most of the summer, and I broke more vintage Wahs than I care to acknowledge, and most of them were loners, and I felt terrible about it. And I got to a point where I just said, you know what, the heck with it. I'm just going to plug straight in the amp. I don't really need it anyway. And Joe has become a very good friend, and he's a gracious cat. I can't say enough good about him, and obviously a monstrous player. I was hanging with him, and we were having dinner one night, and I said, you know, I was telling him about it, and he was like, "Have you ever used one of mine?" And I said, "No," and I said, and you know, in my mind thinking, you know, I've tried all these other new ones, and none of them sound like I want them to sound, and like in my mind thinking, oh, I probably won't like it, and. And he was gracious enough to give me one, and it sounds great. Because the thing about old Wah-Wahs, like I was saying about the tubes and stuff, is the old ones are microphonic a little bit. And that's a good thing, you know, if you like what I like. And so this is microphonic in a good way, and I love it. And I actually made one modification because the travel on old Wahs, like that, you know, is a million times shorter on old ones than on current ones. And it drives me crazy because I'm used to old ones. So this one was only slightly off, and my solution was to tape a pick under the back here with tape. You can't see it, but
it's an easy mod.
Yeah. And that made it so that the travel, and it also, this, you can change it on the inside, but the frequency range of Joe's Wahs goes a little deeper than I would care for it. And so that actually took care of that too, because now it doesn't swell as deep. And the reason why it looks the way it does is I actually do care about the way things look, and I was using this for a while because it's before I got that, and before I had another vintage Wah that I've since gotten rid of because I like that one more, and I got tired of looking down at something that didn't look like something I would use. In no way disrespect to Joe and the aesthetics he chose for his Wah, because it is beautiful. But I'm nuts, as you can tell by now. So I sat one night, and I just made it look like Ken Kesey threw up on it. And I was like, okay, I can handle that. So that's that. This is actually George Metropolis's. This is an original 1967 Marshall Super Fuzz. My favorite fuzz pedal ever made. Marshall made them for a few years, mostly in the UK. And the most notable users of it were Jeff Beck, used one in the Rod Stewart era, the Truth Beckola era. There's tons of photos where you can see him using it. And Pete Townsend used one for pretty much most of, like, from Tommy era, Live at Leeds era, like, well through, almost up right until Keith Moon's death. This was the only pedal he used. And they sound great, and there's a very noticeable mid-range change in this circuit compared to like a fuzz face or a tone bender, you know. And again, old fuzzes all sound different. I rarely have used them live, or that live, once. But yeah, and in the studio, it's fun. I every time I get to a point where I'm like, man, this sounded really good, and I go to use something live, I have like a complex. I really like, I can just about handle a Wah-Wah in line, but I can't handle a tuner in line. I want it into the amp. It's a problem. Moving on to this psychedelic weird looking thing is actually my signature pedal, which is ironic. Brian Farmer, who's Warren Haynes' longtime guitar tech. So he made a couple of prototypes, and this is the last prototype. And he put it in this groovy,
yeah,
you know,
cool.
Yeah, and it's great, and it sounds wonderful. And it's farmlandeffects.com, or you can just search Farmland Effects, Brian Farmer. And then the last pedal that I ever use, I used this on one track on the new record. This was a gift from my buddy Dave Cobb, producer here in town. This is one of those old mega vibes from the 90s, I guess. And this thing sounds incredible, man. I mean, you know, and he was really funny about it because he was cleaning out his studio. And I was hanging out with him one day and we were geeking out about something. And he said, have you ever heard that? And I said, no, I haven't heard that. He's like, you should hear that. And so we plugged it in. I said, man, that really does sound like an old one. And he said, man, just take it. And I'm like, no, I can't take that. He's like, no. He's like, I want to give the guy who doesn't use pedals a really great pedal because I bet you you're going to use it and then I'm going to laugh. And I said, okay. So I took it and I did. I used it on a track on our new record. So he was right.
Okay, so this is your number one guitar.
Yes, without a doubt. A 62 bone stock. It did have a Bigsby, and so now it's got the wonderful snake bite. What happened was this was a very dear friend of mine. He had owned this guitar probably longer than I'd been alive. And it was very early on in my quest of all of this nonsense. And I hadn't played a lot of vintage guitars yet. I've been lucky enough to play tons now. Tons. Initially, it's like, oh my goodness, this is so expensive, you know? And it's like, after you play enough of them, you get used to it, and then it becomes, is it a good one or not? You know? And the good ones are amazing. And, you know, there's ones that are just okay, you know? But anyway, I lucked out right out of the gate because to this day, this is one of the best Gibson guitars, period, vintage Gibsons that I've ever played. And my buddy, he was gracious enough to let me borrow it, which was like letting the, you know, here's just a little fix, you know, here's just a little fix, and then it's like, oh my, I need more. So he said one day, he said, I won't sell it to you, but he said I would trade it. And I said, okay, what do you want to trade it for? You know, and he said, well, I want the same era, 335. But he said, I want it mono with a baritone, like B.B. King's. B.B. King had one exactly like that, which is the Live at the Regal guitar. His was Sunburst, and it also had a Bigsby on it. And at the time, I didn't really know. So I was like, okay, let's find one. That's one of the rarest guitars in Gibson history. There were like five or six of those ever made. So I'm like, jerk? No, not really. So 2 weeks go by. I'm standing in his kitchen, and he gets a call from our good friend Crawford White, who's a very notable vintage dealer here in Nashville. And I see the blood drain from his face. I said, what happened? Did somebody die or something? He said, Crawford's got a 1962 335 mono with a baritone. And I went, yeah, all right, let's go. I mean, that's crazy. I mean, it was ordained, yeah, man. Like, that's just too much of a coincidence. Really, that's stupid. In the vintage world, that's crazy. So, essentially, I sold everything that I had of value, and I mean everything, to get that guitar to swap for this. And that was a few years ago, and she's been with me ever since. We had refretted once because I wore through the original frets. Other than that, I take really good care of it. The pickups, original PAFs, obviously. I won't get too deep in it because it would take hours. But the pickup height is something that I'm really, really, really insane about. Because, again, my buddy Gary, he has this way that he sets them up where it can take hours sometimes, but he keeps cranking on them until it finds this certain harmonic, and then the guitar it just does things that it wouldn't do otherwise.
So it's not like a set height.
It's no,
by ear.
It's
tuning.
Listening to it, because every guitar is different slightly, and I wish I could describe it a little better, but that's kind of the gist of it. At the moment, I actually have clear nail polish over the adjustment screws for him. Because the last time he adjusted it, I was actually like, I was like, man, it is really where it needs to be. And, you know, vibrations and stuff make this stuff move. So, you know, that's one way for me to keep them consistent. But they do need to be checked every once in a while because things change and so on and so forth. And this bridge actually is a replacement bridge. This is a pigtail bridge, which I think for replacement Gibson parts, pigtail makes the most accurate to the old vintage stuff. And a lot of the vintage guys really like the pigtail stuff. There's other people too, but the pigtail stuff is good. But other than that, you know, it was refinished at one point. Somebody had a little too much belt buckle rush right there, so there's a little Schwinn red bike. Somebody did something that was not very cool, but it doesn't really matter to me. And yeah, it's been well worn. And you know, when it was refretted, another thing is when you refret old guitars, people want to plane the neck, plane the fretboard, and that is such not the thing to do. Don't plane it. So if you notice, all the divots are still in the fretboard and all that, and you know, did a wonderful job. And for some reason, this is the original nut, and it's hanging in there. There's no reason it should be still hanging in there, but it is totally fine. It doesn't need to be replaced yet. So I don't know. And the tuners are hanging in there. This one will probably go eventually because this one's a slightly wonky, but. The other thing I was telling you about earlier is, you know, this thing will not go out of tune. I check it with Simo, with the band. We, you know, during the drum solo, which is usually towards the end of the show, I'll turn around and I'll check it. And usually it'll just be slightly off, but this thing stays in tune.
And you play really hard.
Yeah, I do. I've tried to lighten up over time with my right hand.
Yeah.
A lot of that was... banging on Telecasters for a few years. I developed some bad habits that I've had to undo. But yeah, I do. I play hard, and you know. And also the other thing is I never clean the guitar. You work hard to get all that on there, you know? There's soul in that. Leave it alone. So that's red, man. At the moment that we're doing this, I've, again, a lot of dear friends. This, actually, Ed King, who was in Lynyrd Skynyrd and the Strawberry Alarm Clock, Ed is one of my closest friends, and Ed is a very, very great player.
Seattle, Alabama, man.
Exactly. I mean, you know.
One of the greatest solos of all time.
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to write a song.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah, that's the one.
That's one. That's like, yeah. That'll do well for you in the long run, writing a song like that. But anyway, he's a great player, and we're both obsessed with all things, you know, of that era. You know, he loves the Allman Brothers, he loves Cream, all that. We love the same stuff, and we geek out all the time. And Ed is a sweetheart. Anyway, he has two bursts. He has a 59 and he has a 60. And this is a copy of his 59, which they call Red Eye, because on the old bursts, a lot of times there was a tag that hung here, and so when they put it in the window, that's why that's redder right there. I don't know if the camera can see that.
Yeah.
But there was a tag that hang there. And so anyway, that's one of the most identifiable features on his 59, and also the neck profile. And so anyway, this is his prototype. This is prototype number one of his, and that's actually him approving this for Gibson.
What's it say?
He says, more dark red on upper bout. Approved 10/22/2013. So,
Is that the one he had a burst that was stolen for a while?
That's what this is.
So
yeah,
that's the one that was stolen, and he got it back. Wow.
Because it's a very long story, but it's a very good story, and you should look it up online. I've had this for several years now. I lost it for a period, but this is actually an RS Guitar Works. I believe it's they call it a 59 slab. I forget their delineation, but I'm pretty sure that's what they call it. I said I want a white one with a rosewood board like Michael Bloomfield's, because Michael Bloomfield is one of my biggest heroes. And so months went by, they made it, they delivered it, and son of a Von Druk, it was actually fantastic. I was very enamored with it, and I couldn't believe, you know, that I had like almost passed on it.
Now, do you run the same gauge strings mm-hmm. on, what do you run?
Yeah, Diodario has been awesome to me, and I go back and forth between 10s and 9s, but I'm back on 10s right now. I always 10 through 46, the regular XL110s or whatever. You know, I went for a while on 9s on the Gibsons, because if you go back in history and do some research, you see a lot of those old rock guys actually were using, if they weren't using a straight 9 set, like a Ernie Ball Super Slinky set of the late 60s or 70s, they were using a 10 set that was basically a 9 set with a 10 on top. So I got crazy, and I've had my periods where I've gone back, and they do sound different, and I could go on and on about the differences between the two, but I'm back on 10s at the moment, and that'll probably change, because I'm nuts. So, but I got this guitar, it was new when I got it. This is not relicking, believe it or not. None of this, I know that it's painted, and I'll get to that in a minute, but when I got there's pictures online probably of when I got this. It was new.
Yeah, I saw you think when it was new.
And a lot of gigs, that's like the bleed over from, I had this one coat that used to bleed a lot, that was black. So that's actually sweat from my coat. And I actually, you can't really see really well, but I actually cracked this in half once. Very frustrated moment on stage, and I went like this with it on my knee. Cracked it in half, cracked a Tele in half. Now that is some like mind over matter chi. I mean, you can't break a Telecaster. You can like break a Rickenbacker or Gibson, no problem, but a Telecaster?
Yeah.
But yeah, so Glazer put it back together for me. And I let it go for a minute because I hadn't been using it in a long time. And then I kind of had a moment of sentimentality about it, and I ended up getting it back. And it was just kind of sitting around unused. And so one night I was sitting listening to records like I do in the middle of the night, and I decided to give it a psychedelic baptism. And it made me love it more. So that's the late night renderings of a nutcase right there.
So let's talk about your acoustic.
Yeah, this Collings. This is their OM. OM1 or OM1A, I believe. It's their OM style. And Collings has been really amazing to me. They make great electrics. They make great guitars. They're great people. Steve McCreary and Mark Althans and Bill himself are all classy people. I actually haven't had this that long, but I love this guitar. And I've been using it a lot lately. And string it with D'Addario. I actually prefer the regular bronze, because they get deader quicker. Because I like dead strings on an acoustic, because most of the old records that I like, whether they're bluegrass records or country records, or whether they're rock and roll records, people didn't change their strings back in those days. And so to me, the sound of bright, brand new acoustic strings kind of sounds more modern and less of what I really like.
Hmm.
So, you know, there's a window with phosphor bronze strings of where, to me, they sound just right. And these are almost there, but yeah, that's another, you know, my weirdness doesn't end just with that stuff. It continues to bounds you don't want to know.
JD, tell me about the last ingredients.
Well, about half the time I play slide, and it's my favorite. It really is my favorite thing to do. And, you know, if any part of my rig has been any indication of it, of course, like, you know, I use a real Chorus Eden bottle. And I will say this, they're not worth what people pay for them. The fact that, you know, that they're worth, that people pay hundreds of dollars for these is really not okay. But I've been grateful enough to, you know, run into some friends that have stashes of them, and I've been able to get some of them. And the thing about it is, you know, I don't know if you can hear this. But when you hold this up to your ear, it emits the old glass. It does emit a certain frequency that, like, when you hold it up to an extra, anybody can hear. I've done it to a bunch of people, and they, you know, some people go, "Man, you are really, really, really need help," but, and they're right. But modern Pyrex, you know, it's not glass; it's like more plastic, you know. And so, you know, this stuff sounds really good to me, and I like the way it feels, and I've gotten used to it. So I always use an old Chorus Eden, and the reason there's marks on it is because old Chorus Eden balls actually have seams, and if you play slide on the seam, it'll make a weird noise, and sure, also you're gonna get really unsympathetic harmonics. So I always mark them with a magic marker, so I know that when it's on my hand, where the seam is, and I just kind of can make sure that I'm not playing on the seam. So that's very important, and I love them. And then picks, you know, most of the time I've used Dunlop. Dunlop is really great. Brian Keough, I love their stuff. I've used Tortex for years, but just in the last month or two, I've gotten onto the Altex, and I used the one, was it 1 millimeter, I guess, yeah, or is it 1 point, whatever it is.
Yeah.
And I love the way it sounds, and so I actually got a whole bunch more coming because I'm going to change because I really like the way it sounds. And then on acoustic, I use these big Wiegen picks, which Jack Pearson turned me on to. They sound great on acoustic, and I like the way they feel, and they sound like Tortoise. I don't even know what it is. It's some synthetic of some sort, but it's really good, and they're called Wiegen, W-E-G-E-N, and they're, I want to say they're in Belgium or something like that. I don't know, but they're really good, and I like them.
So, JD, where can people out there in TV land hear you?
Well, they can go to simotheband.com, S-I-M-O, or you can go to our YouTube channel, which is Simo the Band as well, or the Facebook fan page, and there's tour dates and stuff on that. Or, you know, if you want to buy the record, you know, it's on iTunes and on the record as well, and in some stores. And yeah, come see us play. You know, bring your earplugs.
This is John Bollinger with PremierGuitar.com. Thanks very much.